Hey there, oddballs. In the paranormal news, we have fossilized buttholes answering long-standing questions about dinosaurs' sex life. And we also have an aquarium that threw a birthday party for its depressed fish. Poor fish. In the cryptic corner, we're going to be taking a stroll with a troll, so to speak. That's right, we're delving into the mythology behind trolls. Also, our special guest will have you looking at your watch more than once as we discuss time travel. If it's odd to you, friend, it's on the Odd to Newfoundland.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friend, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Welcome to episode 127 of your monthly paranormal variety show. Having you here is better than making cookies out of all that leftover Halloween candy or seeing the Christmas decorations coming out in a few weeks. I'm just as excited as you are. Why? Well, because you're wonderful, a masterpiece, beautifully made, important to people because you're important to me, highly favored by your creator, or the law of averages and physics working in tandem, you, my friend, are an oddball, and on this show, your family, and we are one. What an incredible month October was for the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. I hope you guys really, really enjoyed the absolutely just massive amount of bonus content every single day, all 31 days of October. There was bonus content here for subscribers. So thank you guys so much for making that a big success. It's the most downloads I've ever had, and I'm not surprised. And I got some feedback on some episodes that was really, really cool too. And, not all feedback is positive. But it's always interesting to hear other people's takes on what's going on. You know, I look at feedback like it's someone who cared enough to comment. So please do. Don't forget to like and subscribe and comment to all this content. If you never had a chance to go back over and listen to 31 episodes, there you go, man. Lots of content there for you guys to enjoy. I hope you guys had a safe, happy Halloween and everyone in your family is okay. I hope you're keeping safe from the old COVID-19, which, in my opinion, it's going to be so much more scary than anything Halloween could ever throw at us. But anyway, I hope you spent your Halloween the way you're supposed to, curled up, watching horror movies, and eating lots and lots of junk food. And you know what? I've even got some shout-outs this show. That's right. I had lots of new subscribers on many different platforms. But remember, if you subscribe on the Podbean app, if you subscribe on podbean.com, your name is shown to me right away. And I actually give you a little shout-out right here on my show, and this in turn, not only is a shout out, it actually unlocks the horrible para joke of the show. So let's say a big hello to Kirsty, a big thank you to Miss Kelly 709, beautiful picture of your little fella, Miss Kelly. I think we're almost family. In fact, we actually are. She's my cousin in law, and her little guy is fighting a form of heart disease right now on the mainland. So I just want to make a warm wish out to her, as this little guy's first year of life has been very difficult. But I hope you found some comfort listening to the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. A big thank you to Stacy. A big thank you to Mikey. I think it's Mikey, but it's M-Y-K-E-Y. A big thank you to Greet J-E, G-R-E-E-T-J-E. A big thank you to G-Lash or Glash. Thank you, Jamaica 10. Thank you, Mickey. Thank you, Beaver. Thank you, X-Tina. Thank you, Olive. Thank you, Colby Katz. Thank you, Parcher Kelly. Thank you, Coco T. Young. Thank you to the Feral Vixen. Thank you to SLC Coburn. Thank you to Mailbox Unknown, but it actually says Mailbox Uno. And, you know, it just wouldn't be a subscriber thank you list without a gigantic name because you didn't actually fill in the name part. PBG7534EEBAI5. Whoever you are, God bless your heart. You, along with everyone else, have unlocked the horrible para-joke of the show. So, I've actually got a couple for you guys because we had so many subscribers. This is a time travel guest tonight. So, in her honor, I'm going to go ahead and do a couple of silly time travel jokes. Okay, here's the first one. What do we want? Time travel. When do we want it? It's irrelevant. Next one. I used to be addicted to time travel, but that's all in the past now. And last horrible parrot joke. A time traveler walks into a bar. He enjoys his food so much, he went back 4 seconds. Jeez. That's just... Oh, God, that's terrible. after 5 months, I finally stopped losing weight. This intermittent fasting thing has finally hit a plateau. So I've decided to take a little break for a couple of weeks, you know, put on my Christmas 15 a little early and eat normal, like a normal person, change up my weight routine a little bit and then have back at her as soon as December hits. So I'll just give you guys a little update that I actually lost over 40 pounds since I started that many months ago, back in June, actually. And I feel fantastic. And a few people on the show, I actually seen some pictures of me go up on Facebook and commented, oh, my God, you look so good. And, you know, thank you for that, guys. I really appreciate it. I of course, you never get to really see me because it's a, you know, podcast. But it's important that we have that little connection. Feed my ego and I'll feed your spirits. Speaking of which, it's time to get into the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Paranormal News for the month of November 2020.
Somewhere between the funnies and the obituaries is, oh yes, the paranormal news.
Such warm, fuzzy feelings we'll start with tonight, because a pregnant Texas girl was found in her boyfriend's freezer, and it's creepy as hell. Selena Ann Bradley was pregnant with baby number 3 when she went missing on October 16th. She disappeared from San Angelo, Texas. A cryptic Facebook post from Bradley showed up the next day saying, "Listen, I'm fine. I'm okay. I just want to be left alone. When I'm ready to come back, I will. I have to get me and my happiness together. I'm good where I'm at." But the thing is, Bradley was already dead when his Facebook post was made. Her body was stuffed into a freezer in the kitchen in her boyfriend's house and wrapped in a blue tarp. William James Hernandez, a.k.a. Martinez, is 39 and lives in San Angelo as well. Authorities don't know how she was killed. They were waiting on autopsy results. According to an affidavit, there were marks on her neck on the left side of her face, consistent with being struck and assaulted. Absolutely gruesome and horrendous. Hope this kind of stuff isn't a trend. The body was in a freezer. 6 days later, Hernandez called his 4-year-old daughter and allegedly broke down in tears and confessed to the killing. I mean, how gruesome is this, right? Absolutely gruesome. But the weird part is that he stuffed her in a freezer. It's like so cliche. God, tell me now that freezer's not going to be haunted, right? Jeez, what a grisly story. I had to go find one just to lighten the mood a little bit. And let me tell you, this one here is going to hit you right in the right place. Right in your fossilized butthole. The fossilized butthole has answered long-standing questions about dinosaur sex. Are you ready? Dinosaur genital expert is one of those jobs you'd never think exists, but here we are. We suppose technically it's not all about buttholes. That particular piece of anatomy is really more of a mammalian thing. And today we're talking about dinosaurs. In any case, it's a great day for any prehistoric butthole or butthole-like orifice enthusiast. Scientists have discovered a fossil that contains the first preserved dinosaur cloaca. In case you're not clear on what a cloaca is, think of it as the Swiss Army knife of orifices. Jeez, it's a single multi-purpose bodily hole used for excretion, laying eggs, and mating. Oh my God. Out of animals that still exist today, reptiles and birds have cloacas. Considering that they're either more or less related to dinosaurs or directly descended from them as birds are, researchers have long speculated that dinosaurs too had these organs. Those days of speculation now are over, though. We finally have confirmation. We finally have it. You know, it's no longer a theory. It's now been proven. This rare discovery is, well, not really the pain in the butt you think it would be. The preserved butthole belongs to what's known as a Cetacosaurus, or parrot lizard. The 6.5-foot-long creature lived in what is now Asia more than 125 million years ago. As a ceratopsian dinosaur, it's related to well-known three-horned triceratops. The discovery of the cloaca is particularly significant because it is soft tissue. While bones fossilize easily, it's exceedingly rare to find preserved organs, and skin is pretty much like winning the lottery for any paleontologist. The reproductive biology of an extinct non-avian dinosaur is rarely interpreted from the fossil record, the team behind Discovery says, in more sophisticated terms. In other words, we can't find no dinosaur our souls because they're all dead, and they all gone, and they all rotted. But they managed to find this one, a very strange, bizarre window to the past, is this butthole. What's left of the cloaca gives at least a scientist a pretty good window into what its function was for the Cetacosaurus. The organ is just under an inch in length, doesn't protrude out of the body like it does in some modern animals, and has darker pigmentation than the surrounding area. The gross morphology of the vent of the Cetacosaurus, which combines a longitudinal opening vent, yada yada yada. It has a weird looking wang that lays eggs out of it. There you go. That's a cloaca. There you go, guys. Dinosaur sex novelists. You've put out stuff about giant dinosaurs having weird dinosaur sex in your dinosaur porn books. Guess what? They don't even have a wang. Moving on. Oh, this one's so freaking adorable. Gotta get the taste of dirty butthole out of my mouth. You'll never guess why this puppy was so easy to spot compared to the rest. A farmer welcomed a litter of puppies earlier this month in Italy. And wouldn't you know it, one of the puppies stands out against the rest because it was freaking green? Yeah, you heard right. It was a green puppy dog. Christian Malachi was shocked when one of the puppies was born with green fur. Malachi's dog that gave birth, Spalletia, gave birth to four puppies with white fur, the same color as Mama. But that puppy with the green fur, even she, being a special mixed breed, doesn't explain why the puppy was born green. The strange pigmentation could be from a bilirubin that the puppies sometimes come into contact with in the womb. Bilirubin is also the pigment that sometimes creates a green color and bruises. This puppy won't always be green, though. Eventually, with time, the pup will essentially grow out of it, but it's pretty wild to look at. Even so, Malachi's farm on the island of Sardinia quickly decided on a name for the cute little peanut. I mean, puppy. They've named their green puppy, you got it, Pistachio. Well, it's rare for a puppy to be born with green fur, but it does happen in Massachusetts. Back in 2019, a green puppy was born as well. A little boy with his own rare condition adopted the puppy with its own rare condition. Aw, little weirdos, little weird conditions, that's good. And of course, 2020 brought a green puppy into the world when it was born in Asheville, North Carolina, and the family aptly named him the Hulk. Pistachio lucked out as the green pup and will stay to live in the farm. Alicia also plans to raise Pistachio like his mother and will soon train him to look after the sheep. Green is a symbol of luck and hope, so it may have been meant to be that this dog could make people smile amid the COVID-19 pandemic, although she said, awesome, awesome article, man. I love reading that one. COVID-19 got you down? Are you feeling sad? Well, maybe your friends can throw you a party, as long as you're like 6 feet apart, you know? How about this aquarium that loves their fish so much that I had to mention them today, okay? This has to happen. There's an aquarium that actually threw a birthday party for the depressed fish. This is just so odd. I had to put this in here. We know zoo animals can get depressed. And, you know, I could see why. You're stuck in a cage, aquarium, whatever. But who would have thought also applies to fish? I never ever thought in a million years since I keep my own fish. Actually, I'm an avid tropical fish keeper, so let's go. It's normal to start feeling a bit down when you suddenly find yourself isolated from your friends and loved ones. A lot of people have become regrettably aware of that as coronavirus quarantine keeps on going. But who would have thought that a fish could also show symptoms of loneliness? We didn't even know fish were that aware of their surroundings until now. But that's the case with Miko, a 3-foot-long, 35-pound grouper. The 16-year-old fish resides in an aquarium at Sea Life Helsinki, located in the capital of Finland. He recently covered a story about dogs sniffing out COVID-19 infections at a Finnish airport as well. Seems like there's something about the Rona and Nordic animals. Anyway, as the coronavirus hit Finland, Sea Life Helsinki was forced to close its doors to the public. This affected Miko in a way no one could have foreseen. He became depressed. Yes, science says fish depression is an actual real thing. A representative of the aquarium told Life Science that Miko lives alone in a dark, large tank without other fish to keep him company. When people stopped visiting him as well, he became more still and distant than usual. So in an attempt to cheer him up, the staff at the aquarium decided to throw him a birthday party. Whether it was his actual birthday, the story doesn't tell, but really it's an excuse to have a party, so who cares? The birthday boy naturally needed a cake, but frosting and sugar aren't really in a grouper's natural diet, so instead he got a plateful of salmon fillets, which he devoured with great gusto. So what friends did he have over for his party? It's pretty sad that Miko had been so lonely, but he kind of has himself to blame for that, honestly. As we said, he ate his birthday present with enthusiasm. The problem with Miko is that he likes eating his friends equally enthusiastically. The grouper was moved to Sea Life Helsinki in 2007. Before that, he lived in a pet store, but they had to give him up when he got too big for their fish tanks. Another reason was his ravenous appetite. Sea Life Helsinki's aquarium curator, Marcus Dettingen, told the Finnish newspaper Il Sanomat. He said Miko was purchased by a private aquarium owner, but they returned him to the store when he ate all the other fish there. Crazy. Now, at Sea Life, Miko gets a meal of small fish and squid 3 to 4 times a week. The staff thought they'd be enough to keep him sated, so he was originally housed in a tank with other fish. They were wrong. We tried keeping Miko in a couple of different tanks, but there were continuous problems, said Jerchenin. The straw that broke the camel's back when Miko ate an incredibly venomous lionfish. Miko was just fine, though the lionfish was, you know, turned into poo. After the incident, the aquarium staff moved Miko into his own lonely tank, and just like any other fish, he suffered. However, losing his fishy friends didn't sit well with him at all. While he was waiting to be put into his exhibition tank, he started showing signs of depression for the first time. Things got better in early 2019, though. Miko got his own large tank, and things kept him stimulated. He's been slowly introduced to other fish again. So far, he hasn't eaten the 4-inch cleaner fish that swim around the same tank. The aquarium visitor also helped. But, as said, Miko started feeling down again when Sea Life Helsinki closed the doors. To cheer him up during the time that we were closed, the caretakers and other staff had lunch and coffee breaks by his tank. They brushed him with a soft brush to activate him a bit, and he also had a TV to keep him company. You have to remember, though, that Miko isn't any more human than any other fish. They all need activity around them all the same, Jernthan said. Now, this actually led to another incident. Eventually, in December 2019, the staff had an idea to try whether what Miko was like being a pet with a slimy, firmer brush. His reaction to that, though, however, was a bit hard to interpret. That's because he decided to eat the brush. This prompted yet another case of drama centered around Miko. It was a huge gulp and the brush was gone, said Derjanton. We thought he'd spit the brush out, but he just kept squalling it deeper. After some wrangling, the staff managed to pull the brush out of his mouth. They were concerned the operation might have still hurt the fish, but he seemed to bounce back just fine after they had surgery on him. His appetite was soon back and Miko became as active as ever. Ever since, the staff has had to be twice as cautious around him, though. There's a lot of hubbub about a fish. And, you know, I guess it was a pretty good birthday present. Oh, my. Moving on. Look up in the air. It's a bird. It's a plane. Why, it's a 102-year-old World War II vet who's going skydiving. Vivian Millie Bailey was inspired by President George W.'s jump at 90. She doesn't have current plans for a second jump, but what's on your bucket list? It's an iconic time to be thinking about things you want to do before you die. Amid a pandemic, death has never been closer to any of us. Still, we're not allowed to go anywhere or do anything. Right now, my bucket list involves going into a coffee shop and sitting down with an overpriced latte rather than sitting masked in a drive-thru for an overpriced latte. You know, first world problems, but some people with those indomitable spirits aren't brought down by a little pandemic depression. 102-year-old Maryland resident Vivian Millie Bailey, who served the Women's Corps in World War II as a first lieutenant in a segregated army, dreamed of skydiving after President George W. did it at 90. I was inspired by the fact that a person at that age could do the jump, she said to local news station, but Bailey could only dream. The $300 cost for a tandem jump was about out of her budget until she took part in American Heroes Channel Honor Flight Heroes program. The producers asked, at over a century old, there were things in her life she hadn't yet accomplished. When they asked her that, she said right away, some people like me would take offense and respond, haven't I done enough? Like, lived to 102. But that's not where it ended. Not Millie, though. She mentioned wanting to skydive, and the producers picked up the tab so they could close the show with the footage. Her tandem partner, Cornelius, guided the jump and offered a take a second time after they landed safely. Just once is enough, Bailey quipped. Millie Bailey is a remarkable woman for many reasons. She's in good health and stays active even though through COVID. She lives in an assisted living facility in Maryland where she puts together care packages for overseas military. Her nephew, Martin Johnson, takes the care packages at the post office for her. I estimate she has sent over 14 tons of care packages for soldiers overseas. an absolute hero, and someone should be mentioned, especially this month among a Remembrance Day here in Canada. Millie Bailey, we salute you, 102-year-old skydiver. You got bigger balls than I'll ever have, Grandma. Moving on. Tonight, we'll be talking to somebody about time travel. Paradox-free time travel is possible in theory, but if you thought you can go and fix the mistakes of your past, boy, are you in for disappointment. We've covered our fair share of research and high-ranking opinions on topics that approach science fiction. UFOs existing, robots helping old people. This one, though, might be the most out there story of them all. Time travel is one of science fiction's favorite tropes. It's popular. Think Doctor Who, okay? Think Doctor Who. Think freaking Back to the Future with Marty McFly. But now, a fresh study by scientists at the University of Queensland, Australia, posits that not only is time travel theoretically possible, it could be paradox-free. Published in the journal Classical Quantum Gravity, the study states that the universe is stubborn about how things have played out. No matter what a time traveler would do, events would work their way around it and play out the way they were historically did. Wow, that's actually kind of bleak. Does that mean that whatever we do is completely predetermined by the cosmos? Let's get on with the story before we go any further into existential crisis. It's not only mathematics that's the issue. The idea of time travel gets very complicated very fast. You also have to consider the paradoxes. You know, basically, a paradox is what happens when you change something in the past. However, changing that thing would remove the reason you ever went back in time in the first place. Say you travel in time and attempt to stop COVID-19's patient zero from being exposed to the virus. However, if you stop that individual from becoming infected, that would eliminate the motivation for you to go back and stop the pandemic in the first place. The possibility of time paradoxes is a logical flaw that some physicists say proves that time travel is impossible. Others say that you might be able to go back in the past, but you'd be unable to do anything that would cause a paradox in the future. Also, there's the idea that time actually fixes itself. The math checks out, of course, and the results are the stuff of science fiction, Dr. Costa says. Further notes that the calculations could have fascinating consequences for science. According to Tober, the work he's carried out shows that events would adjust themselves to logically consistent with any action a time travel would make, preventing paradoxes from ever really occurring. In the coronavirus patient zero example we mentioned earlier, you might try and stop patient zero from becoming infected, but in doing so, you would catch the virus and become patient zero, or someone else would. No matter what you did, the salient events would just recalibrate around you, basically. This would mean that no matter your actions, the pandemic would still occur, giving your younger self the motivation to go back and stop it. In essence, that means time travel with free will is logically possible. At least the numbers Tober has crunched seem to point in that direction. But if the events will play out in a predetermined way, does that mean we have free will? Or are we just adrift in an immoral, uncaring universe without any chance to affect the outcome of our lives? Oh boy, that's some really, really deep stuff right there. We need to talk about the Hulk. Okay, the Hulk smashes Donald Trump's Hollywood Walk of Fame star. This was just, I seen this on Twitter and I died. Okay, I just died laughing. It's definitely a protest thing, but my God, first things first, we're here at, what do you even do? The Hulk, or at least the man dressed as the Hulk, began to vent his rage on the Hollywood Walk of Fame on October 2nd around 5 a.m. The Hulk showed up at the street looking for a certain star. The TMZ wrote. Namely, he was looking for a star dedicated to President Trump, and of course he found it. Why wouldn't he? The stars are sort of right there in front of you. He then began, in a very Hulk-like fashion, to smash the star apart. But while the real Hulk probably wouldn't have needed more than a trusty fist, this man wasn't quite so powerful. Instead, he hacked the star apart with a pickaxe. According to law enforcement officers, the man was able to destroy the memorial beyond recognition. At our best knowledge, no one has been arrested yet. But once someone is, the perpetrator might be looking at a hefty bill and fine. Police sources say that they have filed a felony vandalism report on the incident, considering the Hulk wannabe caused an estimated $5,000 in damage. The big green guy may have to cough up some green. That's pretty rough. Guys, we had a pregnant Texas teenager found in a freezer. Fossilized buttholes explaining how dinosaurs mated. A green puppy. A depressed fish who got his own birthday party. A 102-year-old war vet who went skydiving, God bless her grandma heart. A study that says paradoxes might not even be a thing. And a guy dressed up as the Hulk destroyed Donald Trump's star on the Walk of Fame. God. I know he'll be voting for in a couple days. All these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
C is for your claws so sharp to me. R is for reports we seldom see. Why do we ignore creatures of myth and lore? P is even more puzzling monsters we adore. T is for tales passed through the years. I is for icons of all our fears. D is for discovery of strange creatures in every country. It's the cryptid corner or to Newfoundland. Yeah, yeah.
Nothing worse than an internet troll, you know? Really. But there's a lot of lore and a lot of stories behind these cryptids. And I wanted to talk a little bit about trolls this month, as I think it's kind of cool, kind of different, and not a lot of people touch on it. Two people reportedly met a creature dubbed the Troll when they were skiing in Emmerdervi in 1970. And that's in Finland, if you're wondering. Described to be very thin, with a hooked nose and pointed ears, and wearing a cone-shaped metal helmet. The Troll is a fearsome member of mythical anthropomorph race from Scandinavia, mostly from Norway. Their role ranges from fiendish giants, similar to the ogres of England, to a devious, more human-like folk of the wilderness, living underground in hills, caves, or mounds, depending on the type of troll, forest or mountain. The forest type sometimes likes to hide and hibernate in deep springs or rivers. The mountain troll mostly likes to house in mounds or hills. In Orkney and Shetland tales, trolls are called trolls, adopted from Norse language when these islands were settled by Vikings. Trolls were most famously sighted in Imajärvi, Finland in 1970 by farmer Esko Viljo and forester Aaron Habinoen. When they were skiing, they encountered a strange... Hello. Oh, hello, Sam. Hi, buddy. How are you?
Good.
I didn't think you'd come in here and be a part of the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Why don't you say hello to everybody?
Hi.
Do you know there's 1,000 people listening to us right now? Yeah. Do you know what Daddy's talking about?
What?
Trolls. Do you know what trolls are? They're like little monsters and they're kind of cute. Do you want to hear some about them?
Yeah.
Okay. The men saw a flying saucer emerge from the fog and emit a blindingly bright beam of light before they lost consciousness and awoke on the mountainside. They later recalled being a troll-like being. So, could trolls be aliens? You don't know. They could be. They might be.
That's an alien.
Yeah, an alien. That's right. They later recall seeing a troll being coming from the UFO, so people are thinking that trolls might not actually be of this planet. But there's more to the story than meets the eye, so to speak. In Norse mythology, trolls, like thurs, is a term applied to jotnar, and are mentioned throughout the Old Norse corpus. In Old Norse sources, trolls are said to dwell in isolated mountains, rocks, caves, and sometimes live together, usually as father, daughter, and mother and son, and are rarely described as helpful or friendly in the least. Later in Scandinavian folklore, trolls became defined as a particular type of being.
That's an alien.
Yeah, they do look like alien. Numerous tales about trolls are recorded, in which they frequently describe as being extremely old, very strong, but kind of slow and dim-witted, and are at times described as man-eaters.
I can't really see them.
You can't really see them? Do you want to see the man-eating troll? Do you think it's scary, Sammy?
No.
You don't think it's skull? Do you believe in trolls? You do?
Yeah.
Do you like the trolls from the Trolls movie?
Yeah.
Well, what if I told you they're not like that at all? They're actually solitary beings, and they generally have some form of social organization, but they kind of chill out by themselves. They're not really buddies. Where they differ is that they are not Christian at all, and those that encounter them do not know them. Therefore, trolls were in the end dangerous, regardless of how well they may get along with Christian society, and trolls display a habit of kidnapping and mountain taking and overrunning a farm or a state. My goodness. And right here, there's all kinds of trolls here, all kinds of pictures of them. Sam, do you see them?
Yeah.
Okay. Do some of these look a bit silly, don't they? And some of them look really scary. Look at that guy there. Can you describe him to the people at home?
That one there is not scary. He looks like a monkey.
He looks like a monkey. Why does he look like a monkey?
Because he's got the tail.
He's got the tail.
But yeah. That one. Look at that one.
Yeah, he's a big, snarly, stinky-looking fella, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's golden.
He's golden, yeah. And there's all kinds of different trolls, too. Some trolls look very human-like, and other ones, well, they kind of look like Bigfoot. Maybe even a bear. What's really interesting, though, about trolls is that they exist all over the world in some form. People call them mountain men sometimes, too. Anyway, one thing I do know for sure, they are the equivalent to fairies in Anglo-Celtic tradition.
I want to go down.
You want to go down and look at the pictures again?
Yeah, I want to look at some pictures and I miss.
Well, I'm glad you are a little tiny paranormal enthusiast. And much like trolls, you definitely deserve to be a part of this right now, Sam. Because this is the cryptid corner on the Isle de Newfoundland. Take care, guys.
Go down.
Go down? Again?
Because I want to see some ones I missed. But no, up. Those ones look like Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And the other ones up there?
Yeah. Wow, that one there looks kind of scary, doesn't he?
That's a troll?
Yeah, that's what they think it looks like anyway. If a big troll came here, what do you think Daddy would do to it?
I think you'd kill it.
You think I'd kill it? Yeah, that's right. They don't call me a paranormal investigator for nothing.
Why do they look like humans?
I don't know. People think they might be aliens. Anyway, this is enough nightmare fuel for my 4-year-old son. Say goodbye to everyone, Sammy.
Bye-bye! Thanks for watching our video.
It's actually not a video, sweetheart. It's a podcast.
Yeah, I'm just saying that because it's like a video.
Because it's like on YouTube you watch?
Yeah.
Okay, say everyone, say thanks for listening to the Odd the Newfoundland.
Thanks for listening to Odd Newfoundland videos. Bye! Later, yes, so bye.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, always available, always free, always odd.
Before we get to tonight's special guest, have you guys heard about my amazing sponsor, Acusonus? These guys are wicked, man. Like, the best audio editing equipment, or should I say, not equipment, you could possibly ever dream for. One of the best things I've ever come across, and something I truly believe will make your podcasting game, well, not a game anymore. It's going to up your game, man. You're going to be the master, because with a simple turn of a knob, you can turn any of your podcasting, you know, audio engines into like a full-scale audio editing system. It's so easy to use. Even I could use it. And that's saying a lot. Trust me, kids. This thing is perfect for anybody out there who is absolutely clueless about editing but wants to sound amazing. Please give it a try at AcuSonus.com. And before we carry on with our guests, I'm going to tell you a little tiny bit about this amazing piece of audio equipment that isn't actually equipment. It's just a plug-in for your existing interface for your computer. There's this thing called a leveler, okay? The voice leveler, and it is a beautiful thing. This thing does amazing work, okay? It literally takes your voice, no matter how high or how low things are, and makes it work, man. It levels it out. So things are fantastic. Anyway, check this out. Check out the sponsor. It's all in the show notes. Have you ever wanted to go back in time and fix all the things you done wrong? Or maybe relive all the things you done right? What if I told you there's going to be moral implications of that? And there's lots of people out there who love the concept of time travel, myself included. I love it. But you know what? You got to realize there's different implications for this. Tonight, I have the guest who is actually the author of the new Time Bender series. That's a young adult series, folks. It's not easy to write for adults. It's definitely not easy to write for young adults, okay? We are definitely breathing life into this tonight. And we're going to explore, you know, the implications of time travel. It's going to be part history, part faith, and part science. But what tonight's guest explores most is the what-ifs of life's most significant moments. Should we go back in time? Well, thank God we're here in the present with JB Yanni. JB, how you doing tonight?
Good, thank you. And you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks so much for taking the time here tonight. As you know, we love our authors here on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. And, I mean, it's Halloween. This episode is going to drop on November 1st. So everyone's got like a Halloween hangover. They're probably all thinking about, oh, man, I just want to curl up with a good book. I just want to chill. I mean, I'm looking at this book series, and I'm thinking it's not just for young adults. It's for anybody who might be a fan of, oh, I don't know, Doctor Who, for instance.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, although it's targeted for young adults, you know, there's a lot of adults that really, really get enthralled with this time travel idea. And because it's set in the 70s, you know, it's very nostalgic for adults.
Gee, I can't think of a multi-billion dollar movie that, you know, the greatest, biggest, most amazing, long-lasting movie of all time, which actually was a 10-year-long multiple movie story arc that actually ended in a time travel sequence. I'm talking about Avengers, folks. Like, there's big bucks in this, okay? It's true. JB, tell me a little tiny bit about your beloved series. Tell me about some of the characters and where you draw inspiration from yourself.
Well, you know, like a lot of people, I've always been sort of fascinated with the idea of if you could travel, should you through time, and what would you do with that power? You know, meet important people or maybe change something you think you would do better. And, of course, everybody's had a moment in their life where they say, oh, if I could go back and do that over. So that idea has always been something that's intriguing to me. And, you know, I really wanted to turn it into a story that did a couple of things. One was close enough to plausible that everybody would think, oh, we could probably do that. And two, was empowering, you know, and show younger people, teens in particular, in a better light, you know, empowering them to make huge discoveries and do things, you know, that they may not think is possible.
Oh, well, that's a lovely message. And I like the idea, too, that we've already got these things in the back of our mind. As soon as you say the word time travel, like, yeah. I'm thinking about, my wife likes this TV show. Oh, my God, what's it called, Steph?
Outlander.
Outlander. She loves that show. And she just cannot get enough of it. It's about a lady who time travels. I mean, who here hasn't seen Back to the Future? Marty McFly and Doc. I mean, come on. So, you know, we think of all these.
A bit of an 80s cult, but yes.
Yes, right? And the fact that these guys go back to the, you said 70s, 60s, and 50s, correct?
Well, the Time Bender series books is actually set in the 70s.
Yes.
So pre-internet and pre-cell phone, that was the other reason I wanted to set it in the 70s, was to take it to a place where it wasn't quite so easy to figure things out. You know, they do travel back in time to, you know, the 60s, the 50s, you know, and go forward, actually, at the end of the second book. So, you know, I really wanted to, you know, show some important moments in history as well.
So cool. You know, we then have to have the ability then to write, though, in a manner that really foreshadows present writing. That is really difficult even to wrap my head around. As an author, that must have been quite the struggle. And I bet you there was many times where you had to, like, jump ahead a couple of chapters and then go back again and make sure things made sense. The continuity, I guess, is the difficult part, hey?
Yes, and in the books, you know, I sort of explore that idea of how will they know if they've done anything, you know, both positive and detrimental, if they, you know, go in their machine and go back in time and try and change something. You know, what if they accidentally do something way more significant than what they had hoped? So, you know, in the books, the young people do sort of struggle with that idea of, you know, what if we do something bigger than we planned? And it actually plays out for them in the second book that they did go back to change something and it didn't make it quite, you know, positive, and they decided to go back and repair it. And so,
wow.
You know, there's that moral question as well.
And, you know, I can't help myself. I just, once again, another pop culture reference to time travel. I think about that Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episode where they go back in time and Homer walks on a butterfly. And then in the future, everyone has tongues that like lick out and eat creatures. So, you know, we got to be careful of that. You know,
the scientists call that the butterfly effect.
Yeah, and that's where I was kind of headed with this.
And you do something teeny tiny and you have rippling, humongous effects by the time you're done.
And I think the ironic part of that was the fact that it was a butterfly that set off the whole chain of events. So that was the fun part. So, you know, the concept of time travel has fascinated scientists and writers for centuries. I mean, let's be honest. If there was one power we could have that could really alter just about everything, it's time travel.
Yes.
You know, and...
Yes, and, you know, yeah, the idea of time travel dates back much, much farther than we actually think in terms of ideas and even, you know, moderately written word in the idea that we understand. But, you know, as we move forward and now we can go to the moon and now we can travel through space and stay in space for long periods of time, this feels like the last great, you know, adventure is figuring out how to travel through time. So I think that's also a fascination for a lot of people is, you know, can we figure that out?
No doubt. I mean... Yeah, I hate to reference Avengers again, but like a good subplot of that final movie is Tony Stark figuring out time travel. And then he actually has that moment where he and it shows the progression of his character, of course. You know, that whole series is about his character going from just someone who's just a scumbag, basically, into the greatest hero there ever was. So the idea that this guy is having that moral dilemma himself, should I bring this concept to the other Avengers? I'm not an Avenger anymore. Should I give them the chance to go back and right the wrongs because I have a kid now in this reality? And, you know, that was definitely a part of that movie. So it's very interesting to see that, you know, we've had a fascination with time travel, like you said, really since, my God, when was the first real time travel story? Like, it must have been forever ago.
It was actually on a papyrus.
What?
You know, all kinds of things that you think you know. And I have details about that first written story of time travel on my website.
Wow.
Where you can go to get some more information about that because, you know, it's shocking to think that we've been contemplating that since humans figured out how to write anything in any form. So, you know, I found that very fascinating. And, you know, clearly as we've advanced, our thinking about it has absolutely changed, and now to the point that the scientists think it's probably possible if we can find an energy source that will help do that, and some form of vestibule you can put a human in to be able to sustain the force that's required to do that. So I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility that we'll figure it out, but then, of course, now you're struggling with all those moral questions.
That's right. Now, do we go back in time and stop that bat for COVID-19? Did we go back and just burn that cave to the ground? Or do we already have a vaccine ready to go? Like, there's different ways of going about it. And, you know, I could think back to a lot of things. Oh, my God.
Yes.
You know, the latest Deadpool movie, he has a time travel device, and he goes back in time and kills baby Hitler. Like, come on. There's going to be repercussions for that. Like...
The academics actually have a paradox they've named after that. They call it the killing Hitler paradox.
Yeah.
And what they suppose and they propose in that paradox is if you take away some huge wrong, some evil, it will create a vacuum and there is a potential for something even more evil to fill it. So, you know, they've really sort of thought through all of these moral questions and come up with, you know, contemplate this before you jump in that time machine.
So there you go, guys. Maybe you should just let this whole Trump thing play out, you know, if you're not a fan, and just let it go. You know, we're actually going to be dropping this episode on the 1st of November, Yanni, at JB. Yeah. And, you know, it's very close to election time. You know, you think about it from a political standpoint. I mean, what happens if, you know, Honest Abe never got to that podium? I mean, what could have changed? And there's so many things that we could have changed, so to speak. But would they have really left us in a better state than what we're in? It's a really, well, really, it's a mind-bending, pardon the pun towards your books, idea. And I think that's where the name of the book is coming from.
Yeah, I'm actually working on a third book now where they do go back to pre-Civil War time. And they accidentally do a couple of things that does change the course of American history, and not so much for the better. So again, they're going to have to take some steps to fix what they did, I think. But I'm not quite finished with that book. But, you know, that pre-Civil War time period and Abraham Lincoln in particular really enthralls me. So, of course, I had to find a way to incorporate that in one of the books.
You know, I don't usually have people on camera when I do these interviews, but it just so happens I got your face in front of me. And every single time you talk about your characters in your book, just this smile comes across your face. I get the feeling like you might be very much in tune and very much attached to these characters. And, you know,
I have become very attached to these characters. And frequently I'll be writing along and surprise myself and say, oh, I didn't know that about Deb. I didn't know she thought that. It's almost like they're revealing themselves to me as we go along and developing. And so, yeah, I've become very attached to these characters. So,
without giving away too much about your series, because I like to think there's a lot of people listening to this right now who've never read Time Benders, okay? So like, tell me a little tiny bit about, your main characters, so to speak, and who they are and how they found themselves, even before the whole time travel comes into effect in the book.
Okay, so it's about four siblings. They range in age at the beginning from 17 to 10, and they are suddenly orphaned when their parents are in a horrific private plane accident, and they're shipped off to boarding school. And while they're there, they discover this kind of unfinished math problem that turns into this secret to bending time. And they build this machine, and initially they want to try and correct the huge wrong in their lives by bringing their parents back. And along the way, they, of course, deal with these moral questions and the logistics of time traveling and getting information and researching and knowing how they're going to accomplish this. And, you know, even some spiritual questions along the way about their grieving process and their family development. So as the books progress, you know, they age and they learn things about one another and their family and their time traveling. And so, you know, they're growing up in the stories and learning things along the way that I think will speak to a lot of people.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of us out there who'd like to go back and maybe course correct ourselves. Think of a lot of divorced men and women out there right now. But, yeah, you know, the idea that...
You don't think in that big term, like, you know, trying to eliminate Hitler before he comes into power.
No, God, no.
I think there's examples in every one of our lives where we look back at various times and go, I wish I did that differently. So I think everybody has a situation where they think, if I could just hop back and redo that one little part, it would change my entire life. I think it's something that touches everyone in some way.
You know, there's definitely going to be, obviously, this is the third book you mentioned. And you know, so we've got three books in this series, one on the way, two already done.
Yep.
Like, do you find, like, now you get to, like, book three and you're like, should I go back and time travel to the first book and be like, guys, don't do this?
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of a vicious cycle when you start down that path is, oh, should I have done that differently? Should I have done that differently? But I've really enjoyed, you know, telling this tale, and I certainly hope it touches a lot of people. They find something in it that reminds them of them when they were a teenager, you know, makes them think about the science and the math and the history a little bit. And I include in the back of all the books notes so people know where I got my information and what's real and what's fictional about the story, because there are real events that occur in the book as they correspond to events happening in the 70s and situations that, you know, I wanted to make sure I conveyed some extra information, maybe spark some interest in a subject that, you know, people didn't think about when they picked up the book.
Of course. And of course, your target audience is not, you know, well, I got to say it's the hardest audience, really. This has got to, like, come on. It's been a long time since we had a good fictional series come in there. You know, it's been a really long time. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Tolkien's going to live forever. But the idea that really, after Twilight, then what? We may have had a couple of things, but, like, really, though, like, has there really been a whole lot of books, like, you know, since Harry Potter was kind of redone and then all that, and it's kind of like, now what? You know, where it only makes sense for you to go into the next lot. We had werewolves, okay, we're done. We had vampires, done. We had hobbits and trolls and monsters and wars. Okay, now it's time to time travel. This is the only logical progression. It really is.
Well, and I wanted it to be, you know, just believable enough. You know, science fiction requires, you know, the suspension of disbelief a little bit anyway.
Of course.
But I wanted people to read this and relate to the characters, know people who are like these characters, or maybe they themselves were like one of those characters when they were a teenager. And if you are a teenager, see yourself doing these things. You know, so I wanted a story that had that touch of realism. I have nothing just bad to say about the vampires or the magicians. I think those are all wonderful pieces of literature. I just wanted something a little different.
That's right. And that's what I was getting at. It's nice to see a different genre, basically. And don't get me wrong, time travel has been popular forever. It's always been in our kind of our forefront. But I must say, it's been a while since there's been a good time traveling series, like a books out there that I can think of anyway.
Yes.
So thank you for that.
There's not really a new and different series. So
that's right.
I hope I fill that gap.
Good. There's a good gap to fill, right? Doctor Who needs a break anyway. Come on, guys. Give Doctor Who a break. Oh, my God. How many times is that poor guy going to regenerate?
I've been watching that for decades, you know.
Yeah.
I almost feel like enough.
Oh, but you can't say enough because then it's only going to start over again with a new character.
Exactly.
Tell me a little tiny bit about your favorite character in the book. You know, we write these characters in and we have this idea that maybe there's bits and pieces of yourself in each of these characters, and people you know and love and care about are actually in that book and they'll never have to know. Trust me. Now, there is an unwritten rule. If you buy my book and my character is based on you and you find that out for yourself, I'll tell you straight up. But you got to buy the book first, right?
I come from a family with four siblings, so there's quite frankly a little bit of all of us in the four main characters.
Cool.
My favorite character by far is Deb. She's the second born in this tribe, and she's very thoughtful, research-oriented. She's very much like me. Maybe that's why I am so tied to her. But yeah, there are pieces of my family, my friends, teachers I had when I was younger, weaved into these characters. So if, you know, if anyone knew me or knew my family members and read this, they'd probably be able to identify them.
That is always interesting how that happens, hey?
Yeah.
And you know, that's one of the reasons I've always wrote nonfiction myself, because I cannot help it. I've got to put people I love and care about in those books, and it just doesn't do them justice sometimes to me. So yeah. I stick with the nonfiction, you know, stuff with me. It's all research oriented. But anyway, I digress. Let's talk a little tiny bit about every story needs a good villain, right? But some stories, the heroes are the villains in certain ways. So tell me a little tiny bit about how this book works. Is there actually a villain in there, or is it more of the conflict of using time travel that's the issue?
It's the protagonist in these stories is absolutely the moral question and the dilemma over should we, and what does that mean for, you know, their spiritual beliefs? Is there a plan that I'm destined for, that I'm now fiddling with, and should I be doing that? That's very much the conflict. There isn't really a villain in the stories.
Interesting stuff. So sorry, guys, no Bond villain this time.
Yeah, there's no real villain in this story, but, you know, they face, you know, repeatedly some questions as they learn and evolve and grow, which, you know, I think in some ways is a little bit harder to tell, because, you know, if you have a great character that is in some conflict over something, it's a little bit harder to portray them, I think, accurately and thoughtfully and in a way people can relate to them than simply having some villain they're fighting.
Absolutely. And, you know, the moral dilemma is always more interesting anyway. You throw in the fact there's teenage angst there, too. Oh, boy. This might turn out to be a great, great book.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they are, you know, they are at the heart teenagers. So they do regular teenager things and have regular teenage angst about certain things throughout the story. And so, yeah, so there is that aspect of it that hopefully will attract that age group crowd. But for the adults, you know, remind them of some things you did years ago.
Okay. Let's talk a little tiny bit about future plans. Obviously, there's a third book in the works, as you mentioned. So the first book is called?
The first book is called Time Benders and the Machine.
Yes.
And that launches their efforts. The second book is called Time Benders and the Two Promises. It's based on things that occur in that second book. The third book is going to be called Time Benders and the Long Road Home. And it's going to be a trip that takes much longer. Most of the trips they make in the time machine in the first two books are, you know, no more than a day or two. The people that jump in the time machine in the third book are there for several weeks. So, you know, that has some profound implications for their present time and creates some chaos for them. But it is evolving in that way. So it's going to be it's proving to be a little bit of a harder one to write. And I kind of like that, you know, there's some struggle there to develop these characters. So
it's never too late to go back.
And there'll probably be a fourth.
I like the idea of a villain coming on the scene, man, and just like showing up at that chalkboard and just being like, and erasing just two parts of that equation, ruins the whole thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
yeah,
not Deadpool.
I'm not sure how I feel about introducing a villain in book four. I have some way to resolve that. So.
Oh, my. Okay. So, Time Bender is not the only thing you've written, though. Not the only thing you've written, though. There's another book out there as well, correct?
Time Benders and The Long Road Home will probably be out in early 2021. And I have some ideas for a fourth, so we'll see how that brews up, but probably 22 or 23 for that one. And I've actually got some other time-traveling stories that I want to tell that I've been sort of brewing, so there'll be some different time travel where there'll probably be a villain.
Yes!
So there'll be something to look forward to.
Well, I mean, we're all time traveling, really. It just so happens we're going 1 second at a time into the future at all times. So, you know, Technically we are. Technically we are. Okay, JP, you know, I'm sure there's parts of the paranormal that probably fascinate you other than, you know, time travel. Is there anything else out there that kind of catches your eye that you might like to write about someday? Like, I know I've got a huge love affair with ghosts and you know, that kind of stuff. But maybe there's other topics out there that you like.
I mean, some of the other ideas do involve apparitions, I think. So there might be some of that. But for me, my favorite genre to read is historical fiction. So I might try my hand at that, although I've read, I can't even tell you how many historical fiction novels. So it might be a struggle to come up with an idea that I didn't feel was replicating someone else's idea.
I mean, you can just go all the way with it. You know, like we had Pride and Prejudice and zombies at one point. And they just put zombies into everything, right? Now you just put Pride and Prejudice and time travel in there. You know, it'd be really gimmicky. It'll work great.
Yeah, perhaps.
Okay, gang. Listen, she's an author. You got to check out her stuff. I want you guys to go, and I want you guys to buy a book. That's right. Please go to her website. She's got one that's, is it JB Yanni?
It's jbyanni.com is my website, and it has my favorite time travel literature, some information about the actual science and those paradoxes, and where you can go to buy the books.
So, guys, that's www.jbyanni.com. And I'll be sure to link that, too, in our show notes when this drops on November 1st for all my listeners out there who a lot of them really are, you know, they love they love books, and I know they're all suffering from a real Halloween hangover right now, so they might just put the werewolves and the witches away for a week or two and maybe check out the Time Benders series. Guys, Time Benders, check it out. Where can they buy the books to, JB, besides your website?
Well, they are, of course, available on online retailers like Barnes & Noble and Amazon. You will find them in local, you know, individually owned bookstores. And of course, you know, you can always contact me and I can help you find them.
JB, are they available in Canada as well, or is it a U.S. one?
They are available internationally.
Wow.
Through Amazon. And I actually have quite a bit of sales in London, so I'm
sure. Well, good for you. Good for you. My goodness, that's excellent. Good for you, JB. Okay, guys, so make sure you support our author here, or, you know, she might go back in time and make you think otherwise. Of course, you'd never know. JB, thanks so much.
I might come back and haunt you.
Well, that's my job. Thanks so much for being on tonight.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.